Welcome to Confessional. I'm Kayla Shelton, along with Mike Moran.
Tell us your deepest, your creepiest, your darkest. Confess to us. We won't tell.
So you can tell us anything. No one's listening.
Today's confession. Tell us a horrific drugs or alcohol story. Was it funny or embarrassing or downright tragic? Have you ever gone too far with a recreational substance? Did use of that substance ever turn into a serious problem? Did you make it out the other side? All right, on Confessional today, we have the amazing comedian, impressionist, one of the best impressionists on the planet. He will be performing with myself, Mickey Coachella, Beth Hayden, and Eric Navarro on Saturday the 14th at about 8:15 at the Auto Bar. This is going to be my birthday show. Please welcome Craig Gass.
Hello.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, thank you so much, dude. Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I know I've been a total pain in the ass, but
not at all.
You are the man. You're one of the coolest fucking, you know, celebrity types I've ever met, and we really appreciate you doing this.
I'm excited to get back into Baltimore, man. It's been a while, and I've always had some of my favorite people live down in Baltimore.
Oh, yeah? Who do you know down here? You know Mickey, right?
And Amelia, and that radio station really made me feel like family.
Nice.
They brought me out to a couple of events with their listeners, and I got to know their listeners. And man, there was some crazy listeners. I don't know if I ever told you about the two listeners who got arrested on the trip to Mexico.
No, what happened there?
So 98 Rock used to do this event where they would say, "Hey, we're going to go to Cancun, and we're going to broadcast for a week out there. And if you want to join us, there's this company that provides these packages. It's a reasonably priced trip.
Right.
Come join us for our spring fling." So every year in March, when people are tired of the weather, everybody would just take a trip down with the radio station and just get hammered at a resort. And hundreds of listeners would go in one plane. So it was like, it was like the ultimate like concert bus go to a concert. You know, everybody's on this one trip to Baltimore, I guess this couple that always fights. I guess the year before they'd had a big domestic disturbance at the resort where the wife had thrown the husband's clothes out the balcony and threw and said, "Get out of here."
Classic angry wife move.
What's that?
Classic angry wife move, the clothes out the window.
Oh yeah, yeah. But man, did they step it up on the next year where I had found out from several people, "Hey, remember that couple last year?" And I said, "Yeah." They said, "Oh my God, did you hear what happened at the airport?" "No, what happened?" "They're fighting as they're going through TSA." And the wife says to the TSA screener, "He has cocaine."
No.
And
that is breaking the code. That is too far.
And the husband says she bought it. And they both were detained. They both ended up getting processed. They both spent the night in jail and still got on another flight so they could still go party in Cancun with the radio station. It was insane. It was absolutely insane. So
something like that. Yeah. You're from Cancun.
Yeah, man. I just remember going, man, people in Baltimore are so much fun. This is awesome. Like, yeah. So I'm excited because we're going to do this show at the Auto Bar.
Definitely.
A week from September
14th.
Yep. 1 week from today.
1 week from today. We have the amazing Craig Gass. We got a few other comedians on there with you, Mickey, Beth Hayden, and myself. And we will be doing a Kiss tribute band immediately following the stand-up show.
Unbelievable. I love that aspect of it because I've been making fun of Kiss playfully as a fan. I've been doing jokes about Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley for years, and it's led to a relationship with Kiss. It's led to me performing with Kiss. And it's crazy that that it's gone this far and that nobody's murdered me yet. I'm very grateful that Gene Simmons has an incredible sense of humor about himself. Thank God. Yeah, he his son comes out to the Comedy Store a lot in Hollywood, and his son has told me on more than one occasion, "Dude, you showed up right when my dad started to get a good sense of humor about himself is when you started doing that impression. If you would have started doing that impression and messing with people, like even like a year earlier, he would have killed you. He would have found you and killed you."
And so apparently the elder was not an ironic satirical joke.
No, no, it was,
Carnival of Souls was with a straight face.
What's that?
Carnival of Souls was with a straight face. Is what you're telling me.
Straight face, man. They're a fun rock and roll band, man. They're just about having a show.
Yeah.
Just a great show. And you can't deny it. You go to a show like that and you go, Jesus, this is crazy. And you have to. Every single band that came after Kiss, almost every single band, acknowledges Kiss as an influence. Everybody wanted to pick up an instrument.
Kiss was like the one holdover when we kind of watched like glam metal turn into grunge. Even the grunge guys loved Kiss.
Yeah, you know, like this feels like terrible name dropping, but a friend of mine, Mike, plays guitar for Pearl Jam, and he has said Mike McCready. He has said that I don't think there's a day that goes by that the topic of Kiss doesn't come up at least once in our band. Like, they always are having discussions about Kiss. Angle, some aspect.
Right. They were kind of my gateway drug. I had never even heard them, but I saw the posters on my friend's brother's wall, and I was like, I got to get into that band. And then I see them on MTV in like 1989 without makeup on, doing power ballads and being like, this is what parents are afraid of.
You know what? Wait a minute. You bring up something very interesting, though. The first time you became aware of Kiss was a poster. You didn't even hear any music?
Correct. For years, I was drawing pictures of them in my room with makeup on, with having never heard any of their makeup music. And I'll tell you why. I grew up in a very small town in Virginia, and all we had was MTV, so I only saw what was current. We didn't have rock radio or anything. You had to buy the cassette if you wanted to hear the old stuff. And then my sister's boyfriend gave me the Gene Simmons solo tape, and then my other sister got mad at me and told my mom it was satanic, and she took it from me before I got to listen to it.
You know what's funny is two of the guys from System of a Down have said that the reason they wanted to play in a band was because of a picture they saw of Kiss.
Really?
Chavo and Darren, Chavo's the bass player, Darren's a guitar player. Uh-huh. Chavo and Darren both saw pictures of Ace Frehley and Gene Simmons and just went, oh my God, I want to do that.
They're like, got to write songs about prison reform immediately.
Yeah. Without hearing a single note, they became musicians because of pictures they saw of Kiss.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So, Yeah, it really is. And by the way, I got to go back to Pearl Jam for a second.
Sure.
We
will have to go back to Pearl Jam eventually.
We were going to get to Pearl Jam? Is that what you said?
Well, we all eventually have to go back to Pearl Jam in life. It was in the
Matt Cameron has an amazing story about being in a band, in a cover band when he was a kid. When he was 15 years old.
Wow.
Matt was in a Kiss cover band.
No way.
They called themselves Kiss. And
Kick Ass?
They called themselves Kiss.
Okay.
They just straight up, hey, we're Kiss. They dressed up like Kiss and they said, we are Kiss. And they went out and did shows at parties as Kiss. So once a month, they would perform at somebody's house and they'd say, hey, okay, so next Friday at Mickey's house, at 8 p.m., Kiss is performing. They'd have the logo, Kiss is performing, and they would they would do these shows in backyards and invite all their friends and then put out directions for everybody at school so they knew where to go. And one day, Matt Cameron gets a letter in the mail from Casablanca Records, which is the record label that Kiss was on. And the first thing he thinks is like, holy shit, we're going to get signed. We're getting signed.
You know, we can use a second Kiss. This one with 15-year-olds.
Yeah, and he opens up the letter, and it's a cease and desist from and he was 15. He was 15 years old. Dude, it's amazing.
If I knew I would get that, I would have done the same thing so I could put it on my wall.
Yeah, apparently he still has the letter, and I think it is.
I hope so.
I don't know if it's on a wall, but he said he still has the letter.
Now, was
so.
It written with the blood of the actual members, like the comic book?
That was a stunt that they did with their comic book where they said, we're putting out a comic book, and here's pictures of us actually putting our blood into the ink.
Yeah.
And you're actually reading comic books that have part of our blood in the ink, which was a great promotion. I mean, it was like that was great publicity they got off of that.
I'm surprised Gene didn't want to put another bodily fluid in there.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? I mean, he certainly spread that around the country as well. So, but yeah, man, I'm excited about next week, man. Next Friday is going to be fun at the Auto Bar. And it's just like, I love Mickey. Mickey's one of my favorite people on planet Earth. Hell last yeah. year, last time we did a show together with me and you, you destroyed at the show we did at the soundstage. So,
thank you so much. Your support means so much to me. It really does. I can't thank you enough.
Well, dude, so what's when you do these interviews, like you said, you usually do a theme, right?
Yes. And our theme today, horrific drug and alcohol stories. Why don't we I'll read one of the listener submitted ones here and then we'll get into yours. That sound good?
Sure. Let's hear it.
All right. So Ben from Hot Springs, Arkansas, last name withheld, said my worst alcohol experience was a going away party for my first unit in the Marines. Everyone I knew liked vodka, and everyone showed up with a bottle. There was steak, friends, beer, and booze, and it flowed freely. I drank 3/5 of vodka, had a 1/5 of whiskey, an unknown number of beers, and a bunch of other stuff, then threw up my stomach lining and passed out. I felt drunk for 3 days, and for the next 5 years, even a teaspoon of vodka would make me throw up. I had a headache so bad that I took what the Marines called vitamin M, which was Motrin, every 4 hours for 3 days, and I still felt drunk the entire time. I couldn't eat solid food for 2 days. Slurping down smoothies like that, broken glass shaking around in my gut. I've never been drunk for several days at a time from one drink.
Well,
binge.
I have from continuous drinking, but from one night. I haven't like been hungover for. I mean, I've definitely felt bad for a few days, but man, that is epic.
Right. You know, it sounds terrible, but that to me in my later era of drinking would have been an okay night if I didn't do anything horrible. If I didn't say something terrible, if I didn't get arrested, I'd probably be okay with puking for 3 days.
That's the worst part of the aftermath is when you wake up, in my opinion, when you wake up and you think about, man, what did I do?
Dude,
and then you think
the
for
I'm
a second
sober.
And then you go, oh no.
Yeah.
Like,
that's why I'm sober, man. If it weren't for that morning after, I'd be drunk right now.
Yeah, man. It's that is some horrifying.
Oh my god.
Oh my.
That seriously is like like when I think about drinking again, I think about that feeling of coming to and being like, "What did I do?" and having little memories and brownouts. And thank God I got sober before the fucking smartphone, because I would be screwed.
Yeah, I think about that too. I was just thinking about that yesterday for some random reason. I don't know what it was that I heard or saw. And I just thought, oh my God, if social media was around when I was still drinking and still using, oh my God, I don't know where that line was that where it stopped being fun, but there was a definite line that I crossed, especially with Coke, where I just I went from being having what I thought were the greatest conversations of my life to going, man, I'm getting a little paranoid. I don't like being around people, and I started withdrawing more and more, and then it just became, you know, if I got a little bit of Coke, I need to be alone. I need to get as far away from people as possible so I can lock myself in a room and just do this.
Yeah, that's kind of where I got to with alcohol. I realized there was far less consequences if I just kept myself locked away.
Really?
Yeah. Because I couldn't piss off anybody.
And you enjoyed it. Or you enjoy just being away from people and just locking yourself in a room and just drinking yourself to death.
I mean, I enjoyed it for maybe 10 minutes at a time, and then it was hell. You know, it's kind of like it was one of those things where early on I really enjoyed it, like in high school or whatever, like sneaking a few beers into my room and just kind of having a party by myself and watching some TV and listening to tapes and stuff. Towards the end, you know, it was pretty miserable other than like the 10 minutes of drunkenness before I passed out.
Wow. You know what's crazy is how long you'll go without knowing that you have a problem before you actually do anything about it, and how far you're willing to take your bad behavior before you realize I need to stop. For some people, it never happens. The first year that I got clean, 7 of my friends died.
Jesus Christ.
All comedians, by the way.
Really?
Four drug overdoses. Yep, drug overdoses and 3 drinking and driving car accidents.
Oh,
the first was my old roommate, Mitch Hedberg, who was
died in Baltimore, I believe.
One of the – oh, my God. No, he died on his way to Baltimore.
Yeah,
That's right.
Yeah, a lot of people
He had just performed at – oh, you were going to say a lot of people what?
Still have their tickets from that show that never happened.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I think Mickey
it's saying poor network.
You there?
But there was a sign came up that said poor network connection. I'm assuming we're okay now.
I hear you. You hear me?
Okay. Yeah, I can hear you. Mitch had just performed at Caroline's.
Mm-hmm.
He did a weekend at Caroline's, and then he had a couple days before he was going to perform in Baltimore. So it was on the way to Baltimore. He stopped at a hotel in Jersey and died at the hotel. Uh-huh. And Mitch was one of the most well put together people I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
He was independent. He was selfless. Wow. He loved to cook. He was just a warm, selfless person. A kind person. He only had one flaw, and that flaw killed him.
Right,
and and it's crazy to me how many people never. It's obvious they need help. You know.
Yeah. We sadly just lost a comedian around here, Dylan Meyer, a DC guy, and. You know, I think in his case, he I don't even think he really was an addict. I think he was just partying a little too hard one night.
Really?
Yeah, I think this fentanyl stuff is taking out everybody.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you know what? It's weird. I feel like an old school guy because, you know, in rehab, it's like nobody is coming there for coke anymore like I used
right,
to.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Everybody's there for pills or fentanyl or something like that, and I'm like, what happened to some old school coke? Like, you know,
no,
I remember
going to Asian opium dens anymore.
Yeah, some guy last night over by Columbus Square Park, some guy offered me coke, and he just kind of whispered as I walked by, like, hey man, cocaine. And I was like, oh man, I still got it. Like, you know, that's cool. You know, guys still
I still look
offer
like the
me coke.
Type of guy who would buy coke from a stranger on the street.
Yeah, I'm still kind of hip that, you know, I look like I might want to do coke. I mean, I'm not ruling it out. You know,
right,
come on,
right.
Man, you at least offer it to me.
Sure.
You know?
All right. Well, why don't you tell us one of your horrific drug and alcohol stories from a personal experience.
Well, okay. I had a heart attack.
Wow.
I, at the age of 32, I was doing coke for on and off for several days, and my heart just gave out, and I ended up I was having problems breathing,
uh-huh.
and a buddy of mine took me to the hospital. They ran some tests. I immediately started calling for a cardiologist, and we need a cardiologist here, stat.
Right.
And I was asking, why do we need a cardiologist? And he said, your enzyme levels are supposed to be this, and they are 100 times that. And I said, okay, what does that mean? He said, you're having a heart attack.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't know how to process that. So I started calling friends while we were waiting. And I was calling friends essentially to say goodbye. And I might be dying. I don't know what's going on, but I want you to know that I'm sorry.
Wow.
I'm sorry that I did this. And it came up in every one of my friendships.
Oh my God.
Every one of my relationships. It came up like, hey man, you need to watch yourself. You need to be careful. Or people were, you know, why are you doing this to us? Why are you doing this to yourself? And I was calling everyone to apologize and say, I'm sorry. And at the end of that week, I spent a week in the hospital.
Jeez.
And it was so weird. Because I had planned on I had the heart attack in Seattle, and I was planning on spending a week in Seattle, and my trips, this is really fucked up. This was like the norm for me, but my trips would always end like this. I would usually slowly put my stuff together in a hotel room and pack all my stuff up. And then I would get a hand towel and I would dampen the hand towel. And I would clean all the surfaces on my room because I had done coke, you know, on everything around the room.
And you didn't then want the maid I would to take, judge you.
And I what?
You didn't want the maid to judge you. You there?
Exactly. And
am I joking that bad that it
yeah,
called
can you hear me?
For that long of a silence?
Oh, I just, yeah, no, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So... then I would take all my dollar bills and unroll them and then take them to the sink. I would wash all the blood off of the bills.
Oh, my God.
And then blow dry the bills because they would all be wet because I had to wash all the blood off of them. I had to blow dry the bills, and then, but this time I'm ending my trip by my clothes are brought back to me when I first came in because I was wearing a hospital gown.
Right.
So I had to take off the hospital gown, and they gave me my clothes all folded up, and I had to sign out of the hospital, and it was kind of surreal. Here's the crazy part.
That wasn't the crazy part.
They released me. Well, that's half of the crazy part.
Okay.
The insanity comes a few hours later.
Okay.
When they released me 6 hours before my flight was supposed to take off. So I asked friends of mine if we could get together and sit down and have a meal, which became a real confessional of like, man, I've really been fucking up and I'm really sorry. And everyone at this meal was like, you know, we love you. We don't want to see you die, please. And I said, I don't want to die.
Right.
And they left and I still had 4 hours until my flight. So I got back in my car and I was thinking, how do I kill?
You there?
All right. I'm hearing you, but I feel like I'm on a delay.
Maybe we should what if we just do the rest of the interview over phone and then we'll edit them together.
Okay, you want to do that?
Yeah, if you don't mind. I'll call you, okay?
All right, go ahead. Give me a call.
Okay, thanks. Hey, buddy. Hey, sorry about that.
Oh, man, I feel bad that it was cutting out, especially in the middle of the end of the conversation.
Oh, it's okay. We'll splice it together.
Okay.
Okay, so you've gotten out of the hospital, you ate with your friends, and you have 4 hours to kill before you get on the airplane.
I have 4 hours to kill before I go on my flight to get back home in New York, and I'm in the car, and I think, you know what, I'll go back to the comedy club. where I started. I'll just after the week that I had, I really could just use a beer, just like a beer. It's so great right now. And then it dawned on me, you know what? Actually, what would be great is a beer and a little bit, like obviously not enough Coke to have another heart attack.
Oh, of course not.
But beer and a little bit of Coke, and then
what's a beer without a Coke?
Yeah, and for the first time in my life, another voice came on in my head and said, "What's wrong with you?"
Wow.
Like you just had a heart attack,
right?
And you wanted more Coke. Like this makes no sense at all. So that scared me straight for over a year.
Uh huh.
And
is that a year without Coke or a year without everything?
A year without anything.
Okay.
A year without drinking, no drugs or anything. That scared me straight for a little over a year, and then I got in a bad relationship, and I started, I relapsed and started going backwards.
Uh-huh.
And then on the 2-year anniversary of my heart attack, a light bulb just went on, and I had a moment of clarity and just realized, this is really stupid. I've already missed my life, and this is really selfish. I was already at a point where I was starting to help out my mom.
Uh-huh.
I've been paying my mom's bills now for 18 years.
Oh, wow.
And I was starting to circle around opportunities where I literally can take care of my mom for the rest of her life.
Right.
And why am I doing this? This makes no sense.
Right.
I just stopped, and I haven't touched anything in over 3.5 years.
Nice. Congratulations, man.
But it's crazy. It's really, really crazy how many people I've lost.
Mm-hmm.
Who just couldn't control themselves and couldn't control the drinking, couldn't control the drugs.
Right.
And I've lost their lives since. It's
been
really nuts.
Yeah, I almost feel lucky. Like, there was a time when I kind of felt a little pissed off that I had to get sober so young and I couldn't have all those fun years. But then when I see people just very slowly go through it decade after decade, you know, it's like I'm kind of glad I went down in flames like within a few years, you know.
Yeah, I always say that I feel like I hit the lottery. Like, so many people know they have to stop. So many people know that this is a problem, and they still don't stop. And
right.
They just go. They used to just have completely shit lives.
Mm-hmm.
Or they die.
Right.
And I, for some reason, I really wanted it bad enough that a light came on, and I just thought, I can't do this anymore. I really can't do this. Tell me what I need to do.
Right.
Tell me how to get help, and I sought out help, and I'm lucky.
Yeah.
I'm lucky that I was able to. It's weird. There's one little tiny move that you have to do, and it is the difference between life and death.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is just simply
right.
And you have a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
So many people will just.
I know, man. I remember my dad being like, "Mike, you can't drink. It's not that hard, you know. Like, you just can't drink." And you know, it's like, I know. But on the inside, I'm thinking like, "You don't understand. That's the only time I'm happy." You know, it really was an obsession for me.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like after it stopped being fun, which is pretty early on,
uh-huh.
I just did it for the ritual.
Right, right.
Just do it for like I don't know. This is what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
I'm mad at something, or I'm bummed out about something, and this is how I cope. Is I go,
right.
I'm being loaded.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. It was really, really crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I feel grateful to be alive, and it's crazy how, you know, after you get through that breakthrough, the kind of things that you can recover in life and the kind of stories.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I remember hearing a story, one of my favorite stories I've ever heard when somebody who got help was a guy who was a crackhead.
Uh-huh.
And he had burned down the business that he started with his best friend.
Oh, my God.
To get the insurance money to buy more crack.
Oh, man. Imagine that hangover.
After that, they didn't see each other for years. Finally, they bottomed out, and God help, and he's now clean for like a year or two.
Good.
He goes back to reconnect with his old best friend and says, "Hey, I need to take you out to dinner. I really need to talk to you." He says, "Sure." And he sits him down and says, "Listen, I need to confess something to you. I feel terrible about this, but you need to know the truth. I am the person started that fight.
Oh my God.
And I feel terrible about it. His former best friend, that was you. His former best friend said, that was the best thing that happened to me. He said, well, yeah, I don't know what you did with your money from the insurance company, but I took my money and someone advised me to invest in this new company called Apple.
No and, way.
And I'm a
multi-billionaire. No way.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, it just goes to show you, always burn down a business for crack money. You never know what could happen.
Look at the good that you'll do in this world as a crackhead.
Every puff of crack smoke has a silver lining, if you think about it that way.
You know what? You gotta just set your fires, man, and see what happens.
Right.
And see what happens years later when you come back.
Exactly. Life. All right. Well, let's read another confession here. This one is from Thomas from Minnesota. On my friend's birthday, we decided that everyone was going to do shrooms. No big deal. I've done it many times. This time I ate about 8. Then my friend offers me this white powder called 4-ACO-DMT, which is essentially the dabs of mushrooms. Everything starts off fine and then gets weird. The room starts becoming a cartoon. I start feeling restless, so my friend gives me a benzo to calm me down. In my twisted brain full of insecurities and large amounts of psilocybin, I convince myself that it's a suicide pill. Things go downhill. In my head, I've died and I'm in hell. Reality for me is so thin that I start hissing, speaking in tongues, basically what you would see in a movie about possession. I eventually get to the hospital wearing one shoe, pants covered in urine, large pupils. I just sat in the waiting room but never checked in. That's where I come to my senses and walked out, found some friends, and no hospital or police were necessary.
Jesus.
Did you ever do any psychedelics, Craig?
Yeah, luckily for me, they were never my thing. I did shrooms a couple times. I tried acid a couple times. And it just wasn't my thing. Coke was definitely my speed, for sure. And but I did notice some people who would take psychedelics that would have these psychotic breaks like that. And it's amazing to think about how stupid we are. Or how stupid we can be, and what we're willing to try to do.
Right.
To try to have some kicks. And, you know, there's always the rumor of, well, you know, you could become that way permanently.
Sure.
But I do know a guy who became that way permanently.
Really?
And he was mentally just fucked.
Ozzy Osbourne, right?
Yeah, and that guy grew up to be Ozzy Osbourne. Yeah. But it's crazy.
Did he have to go to a mental institution or anything, or was he just kind of out of it?
He just became a guy who you would see around town, just kind of talking to himself.
Oh my God!
Had a break. Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty sad. So it wasn't like he just kind of got a little wacky. Like he had a real mental breakdown.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
It was like a ton of psychedelics in his brain.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's crazy. It is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
You read that letter from Minnesota. It's like, I'm assuming that he's okay now. But,
right.
Right.
Yeah, I did shrooms a few times, and I had one bad trip, and it was very bizarre. I can almost not explain how it felt. But I was convinced another terrorist attack had happened because it was like after 9/11, and it just seemed like all the TV, like everything on TV, just seemed like it was announcing another terrorist attack, and it was very creepy. Yeah.
Wow. I feel bad for anyone who's just trying to smoke a little bit of pot and listen to this. Jesus Christ, you're bumming out my eye here.
Well, were you ever a pot guy?
Yeah, for about a year. I started drinking and smoking when I was about 14. But when I discovered coke, I was like, oh.
Right.
I remember that first time doing coke when I was 15 and thinking, man, I know a lot of people talk bad about coke and they say it's a really bad drug, but do they ever talk about how fucking awesome it is? Because, like, I remember thinking that first night, I had what I thought was the best conversation of my life. Nothing. I just loved talking.
Right.
And it just, you know, it never got as good as that. But that pot, I definitely went through a phase with pot where I smoked it all day, every day.
Wow. No, no, I never really liked it. It made me feel like self-conscious and anxious, you know. Like, it was kind of fun if I was like in a very safe place with a couple friends, but I don't know, man. I liked drugs that gave me confidence and, you know, made me feel I don't know. I needed my anxiety dumbed down, you know, and pot just made it worse. What's that?
Yeah, I get that for sure.
Yeah, and like how you were with coke, like once I found booze, I was like, this is my stuff. I don't care about it. And I never even really tried a lot of other drugs. Like, I never tried coke or anything because, like, booze was just too good and readily available and cheap.
Wow. Well, you know, it was kind of a bummer as a kid who loved coke is that in Tucson, where I spent my formative years, coke was really cheap. Really pure.
Wow.
So, because we were an hour away from the Mexican.
Right.
So yeah, that was in part the downfall. That was just really easy to get.
Yeah.
Really good coke, so cheap. So.
All right, well, let's read. We have one more confession here. Let's see. This one is from Jennifer Dennison, Dover, Ohio. A few things my friends and I used to do while drunk: throw fireworks at pedestrians, steal lawn ornaments, place people's lawn ornaments in their neighbor's yard. I like that. Move for sale signs. These are brilliant. Throw eggs at people. That's a little more primitive. Put random objects in mailboxes. We also used to snort Xanax off of our car hoods during local music shows. I also got really high on LSD one time and went with a group of friends to a waterfall with a really steep cliff and no railing. But my pupils were so big, I could see perfectly in the dark. One time I got high on mushrooms and puked Hawaiian Punch up that I was convinced it was blood. Then there were little gnomes crawling out of the faucet. Then the couch turned into a dinosaur and we rode it. I think I would have run from it. Well, these are actually the fun. I thought we were going to get more like tragic, scary ones. You know, these are actually kind of lighthearted.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's funny to hear an idea of like sitting on a couch and writing it. What is it that I sort of finished? It does sound like a lot of fun. I remember, and this is just alcohol. I remember walking out of a party that was on a major street. And telling my friends, hey, watch this. I'm going to go lay down in the middle of the street and stop traffic. And just laid down.
Right.
And cars were screeching around me.
Wow. Well, now, were you hanging out with Beavis or Butthead at this time?
One truck slammed on its brakes and was screeching right at me. And I remember looking up at the headlights. The tire was right next to my head.
Oh, my God.
And stopped right in time. And then I got up, ha-ha, laughing with my friends, and high-fiving everybody.
Jesus.
A couple months later, someone on the other side of town had been run over, and they were just drunk and just playing around and said, watch this. And I laid down on the ground, and a car ran over and killed them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And that stupidity, that could have been me.
Right, me too.
What dumb shit you do when you're fucked up.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because you asked me if there's a topic I want to discuss, and I said, yeah, let's talk about this because this is a big part of who I am. And I feel like if you're coming out to the auto bar, know that I'm usually funny and usually hilarious, and you'll love the show. But I wanted to talk about the topic that was near and dear to my heart, which is drugs, alcohol, addiction,
right.
And if you're lucky, recovery.
Yeah.
That was something I really wanted to talk about, but I'm glad you gave me the chance to hear some even more fucked up stories from other people who went through the same show.
Well, I'm glad you're sober, man, and you're really, like I said, you're one of the coolest. Every time I talk to you, I get the sense that you're just so grateful to be alive and doing comedy, you know, and that's really inspirational for me. So,
100%. That is absolutely 100%. When people check in with me and say, how are you doing, I always say I'm grateful.
Yeah,
I can't believe I get to do what I love to do.
Yeah, it's incredible.
All over the country. Mm-hmm. You stand up and I get to just hang out with Brian and he says, the show we're going to do next Friday, I can't wait to watch you and watch Mickey perform. And
thanks,
that's
man.
Part of the joy is I can't believe that I get to watch the comedians for free. You
know? Yeah, yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, this will be my birthday party, man. And if you would have told me years ago that not only would Mickey be performing at my birthday show, but also Craig Gass, I would have said, you're lying to me. Stop lying. You liar.
And they're bringing coke.
No, but it really is. You know, I try to like tell people, because I got sober before I did any of this stuff. And I kind of like, I was totally like hopeless and directionless in life, even in sobriety. I had no idea what to do or who I was or whatever. And I even got to a place in sobriety where I was like, I'm sober, but I'm not really enjoying this at all. You know, I'm doing like everything that everyone wants me to do. And it was out of like a really bad depression that I started doing comedy. And, you know, today I'm not successful, relatively speaking, but I'm doing what I love all the time. And, you know, I just couldn't be happier. And, you know, I got to keep that attitude of gratitude that you seem to have. Do you, it seems like a lot of comedians and people in general just fall into the trap of like, no matter how far they make it, they're always just looking at the people above them, you know?
Oh yeah. I know comedians who are some of the most successful comedians in the world.
Right.
Who are worried about, well, what have I done lately?
Yeah. Yeah.
That is universal from top.
Right. Right. Even if you're at the top of your game, like Chris Cornell or Michael Jackson or James Brown, you can still be miserable, you know? And it's like, I think you're right. I think the key is gratitude, and I've got to be gratitude for my little thing that I got going here.
That's it, 100%. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be, I get in that day into Baltimore.
Okay.
And then I get out after the show. So.
Oh, okay. Are you taking a flight or are you driving?
I'm driving. I got to be 280 miles away at the end of that night. Oh,
wow.
I'm driving, so I'll hang out for a little bit and then head out.
Okay. We'll try to get the Kiss band on right away so you can see that.
Yeah, I want to see that. I'm excited about it.
Hell yeah, man.
Because I know I have a link on my page on getgas.com, getgas with two S's. And is it on your page? Like, do you go to the auto on our website?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, there's a link on my page, I know, at getgas.com has all the information. So go to getgas2s.com.
Okay.
And get a link there, and we'll see you guys on Friday.
Awesome. And yeah, tickets are also available through my Facebook page, autobar.com, and Ticketfly. And Friday, we'll probably kick things off around, I think, 8:15 or so. But, you know, everyone's welcome to get there early, hang out or whatever. And thank you so much, man. You're making this like the dream birthday for me. I really appreciate it. I'm doing the show with Michael Ian Black on Sunday and then Craig Gass on Friday. And it's going to be the best freaking birthday week ever.
Well, man, I'm looking forward to it. Thank you for being part of it, man. I'll see you soon.
Awesome. Thanks, bud.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye.